You're listening to History Out Loud, Chat from the Stacks, a podcast by Calderdale Libraries. Presented by Jill Carpenter. So, History Out Loud is back again, and I'm joined today by Steve Stanworth. We're going ever so slightly further afield than Calderdale, and we're going to be talking about the Bronte birthplace, Thornton, which is near Bradford. And we're also going to be talking about the Bronte Birthplace Limited and their goal, which is to reclaim the house and open it for the community. But first of all, I want to introduce you to Steve Stanworth. So welcome, Steve, to History Out Loud.
Good morning. It's a pleasure to be with you this morning.
So just a little background on Steve. Steve is vice chair of the management committee of the Bronte Birthplace Limited. He's also a tour guide and local historian and Bronte Bell Chapel site coordinator and fundraiser. And one other thing, he's a former chair of Birthplace Trust and Thornton in Bloom. So that's quite a resume, really, to be going on with, isn't it?
Yes, it sounds quite impressive, doesn't it, really? But
it is impressive.
I've just fallen into places where I've managed to be involved with a lot of things going on in Thornton. And as always, with volunteering, if you've got a passion for it, you seem to end up at the head of it.
Do you actually live in Thornton?
Strangely enough, no. And I never have lived in Thornton. I've been involved with Thornton for 40 years now. I was a church warden at St. James Church. That was my first involvement in Thornton. I was a church warden for 10 years. But then I got involved with the Bronte Bell Chapel in 1999. Mm. And it's just a village that gets under your skin. I'm sure a lot of people in Calderdale live down there would know the feeling. You get a feel for the place, and if it has a good vibe and it has a lot of history. And that's what really attracted me to the village and what was going on there. So, yeah, I've got involved in a lot of different things.
I'm thinking that people who are listening have a little bit of knowledge about the Brontes. They'll definitely know about the parsonage in Haworth. Some might not be aware that the Brontes are actually connected to Thornton because that was the place where four of them were born. But first of all, I wanted to ask you, when did you first become interested in the Bronte family and their connection to Thornton?
Well, it's quite, I'd say quite recently. It was probably year 2000 when I started looking after the old bell chapel. I suppose a bit of background to that, being a church warden at the church, I used to park my car next to the bell chapel and never really looked over the wall to the left to see what was there. Mm. And this particular day, I looked over the wall and there was two people in the graveyard and surrounded by a mass of weeds. I thought, what's going on in here? So I opened the gate and walked in, and I met a lady called Marge Wilson. She was looking after the two Commonwealth war graves in the Bell Chapel. And there was another chap, and he was looking after his family grave, Jim Allen. And I said, you know, what is this place? And I said, well, it's the old Bell Chapel where Patrick Bronte was a minister in 1815 to 1820. I said, well, how come it's so overgrown? And they said, well, nobody has ever bothered with it. It's just been left to rack and ruin since the new church was built in 1872. It's just a downhill trajectory. So I said, all right, it's time we did something about this. So I formed a group of people, of volunteers, 12 of us, and we cleared a path down to the ruin of the bell chapel. And once down there, it seemed churlish to stop at that. And we cleared the whole graveyard over the next 6 years and made it a place where you can wander around, find your descendants. Had all the graves marked and everything. We got all them logged by the Bradford History Society. And it became a place where people could be proud of rather than just an overgrown ruin. Yeah. So, yeah, that's how I first got involved. And, of course, once I was down there and found out it was a place where Patrick Bronte was a minister, people started bringing you things and said, have you read this book? Have you read that book? Did you know this? Did you know them trees over there, the Bronte trees? And these sort of things seem to stick in my head.
The Bronte trees? Are these ones that Patrick might have planted? Is
Correct. This is the story that when Patrick left in 1820, in between the Bell Chapel and Thornton Hall, which is just on the other side of the Bell Chapel, there were planted 8 trees in commemoration of the Bronte family. Because when they left Thornton, there was 8 family members. So they're sycamore trees, and they've grown now to quite a height. And they're still standing proud, those 8 Bronte trees, yeah. So I got involved, but that's my route into it. And over the years, the more knowledge I've gained, the more people have asked me to go and give talks and come and do a tour. It all helps to raise the profile of Thornton and the fact that Brontes were actually born there. Because a lot of people mistakenly think Haworth is the birthplace.
So that's how you became interested in the Brontes. How did you become involved in the Bronte Birthplace Society Limited? Because this campaign's been going, it's been going for some time, hasn't it?
Well, yeah, it goes again back to the Bell Chapel and finding out that the house on Market Street was in private ownership. And at that time, a lady called Barbara Whitehead had the house, and she done it up in keeping in the Regency period. And you could go and visit by appointment, but it wasn't, as I say, open to the public.
When was this?
This was in 1999, 2000.
Right.
You couldn't actually go in unless you went by a Barbara. And after Barbara sold it, it went into private ownership. It became all different things. It's been 3 separate apartments. It's been a private house. I founded the Bronte Birthplace Trust in 2012 when we knew the house was for sale. And we mistakenly thought we could have this as a community asset, and it turned out we weren't allowed to do that because it was a commercial property at the time. So we missed out on buying it in 2012, and Mark De Luca bought it and turned it into a wonderful Italian coffee shop. He ran it quite successfully up until COVID hit, and then it's not reopened since then. So we missed out in 2012, and when it came for sale again, we founded a new group, and a lady called Lisa Singleton, who was with me on the original group, asked me if I'd like to join them again and form another group to try and buy it. And I said yes, if we could have some of the old people that we had on before, because they were good people and knew what they were doing in terms of grants, etc. And so I became part of the new Bronte Birthplace Limited, Community Benefit Society. And unfortunately, Lisa died earlier this year, which is a real shame because she was one of the leading lights of our group. And so we were determined that we would get this project over the line in memory of Lisa. So, yeah, so I've been involved really right from 2000 to present day. And I just think that the Bronte story needs telling in full.
Yeah.
So we felt it was such a shame that it wasn't open to everybody. So that's why we decided to become a community benefit society so that we can preserve it for perpetuity, really. It would always be there.
You'd say that was the main aim of the Bronte Birthplace Limited.
Yeah, it's to make sure it's never sold privately again. But I think
Yeah.
the main aim of the house is to make it open for everybody, and we mean everybody. My personal thing is Crystal Ackroyd, who's also on the committee with me, is to educate. And we see this as a place where 3 young girls were born and they became 3 of the leading authors in the world. Their books resonate even today, 200 years later. And they were born by the fireplace in that little house, and they were inspired. They weren't wealthy people. They were destined to fail in the times that they were born. Women weren't allowed to become authors and become world renowned. Women were supposed to know the place and go and do the needlework and learn the classics and play piano. But these girls were inspired by their father. So we want to inspire the children of today through education. So we want to bring the 100,000 or so children in our local area, school children, in and to be able to stand by that fireplace where they were born and be inspired and say, look, these children didn't have an attitude of we can't. They had the attitude we will, I can. And that's what we want to instill in our school children.
when I was looking at the website, it was saying you don't want it to be a museum. This isn't the goal. It's not like you pay and you go in and you have a little wander around. And there are three words in the mission statement, which I think are really good and they really bring it home. The three words that you use are learn, inspire and socialize. And that's it's a good way of encompassing everything that you want from this place, isn't it?
Yeah, I think we live in a world of sound bites at the moment, and people sort of resonate with three words seem to get things done, you know, wherever you go with that. But in terms of learn, we want to preserve and promote the cultural heritage and literature legacy of the Bronte family. And that can mean a lot of things. You can say that any way you want, but we want to, first of all, preserve the house, the bricks and mortar, but we want to preserve the legacy and we want to promote the cultural heritage. These girls are from Bradford. And Bradford has a poor reputation at the moment, I would say. And the City of Culture coming along in 2025 is the perfect vehicle for us to promote and inspire people in terms of literacy. I've already done a couple of school trips, turning them into the Bell Chapel, into the super exhibition in St. James Church. And three of the children said it was the best school trip they've ever been on.
Wow.
You know, it brought a tear to your eye, really, when you thought, just cobbled this together just to see what the response will be. But I purposely took school children from inner city schools that have no knowledge of the Brontes at all, see what they took in. And I was amazed by the way they engaged with the subject, and especially the drama part of it. They loved the drama and they loved the audio guides in the display, in the exhibition.
It's really pulling together, isn't it, in terms of drawing in people into a community project. It's a lovely nucleus for everything to all gather around, isn't it? I was reading as well on your website about a recent study by the University of York that suggests 9 out of 10 young people in Bradford suffer from lack of well-being due to discrimination, poverty or bullying. So it is so important to have something like this. And it's so special when children engage with something, isn't it? You can feel it. It's tangible.
Yeah, I mean, myself personally, when I was at school, we did this. School trips were very small. You went to Kirksall Abbey or Bolton Abbey or something like that.
Yeah.
And it was very sterile. You sat and did a drawing and you got the history churned out and then you got taken back on the double-decker bus. I think the kids like to engage, like to be active, like to be moving about, like to feel, like to touch things. And the exhibition in St. James Church, we have Patrick Bronte's writing desk, we have the font that the girls were christened in, have his wardrobe and the coffer. And we like the children to touch it and feel part of it. You know, whereas Howard is a different thing. They're a museum and the things are behind ropes and you can see them. We want ours to be more of an engagement. You know, we want people to be engaged with it. You know, we want them to come into the house. The three bedrooms will be done in theme. The Charlotte, Anne and Emily rooms will be done in Regency period. And we want people to be able to go in and touch things, not stand off and look. We want them to be involved and engaged. I think children love that especially.
Yeah.
Give kids a paintbrush and a piece of paper and some paints, off to go. You know, it's same with this. You give them the headset and they say, off you go and listen. And they do. They love it.
Yeah. We just do a little bit of a detour to just talk about the history now. And we'll come back to the campaign. But for people who are perhaps not at all familiar with the story that is connected to Thornton, first of all, if we just talk about the house and where it's actually situated and what were its origins, when was it built?
Yeah, well, the house was part of Cloggers Row and it was built by John Ashford in 1802. And originally it was just a dwelling, part of a row of terraces. And it's 72 to 74 Market Street, which is a cobbled street. It's the main street of Thornton at that time. And there was nothing at the south side of the road. So you looked straight across the Dale of Thornton, as it were, at the time. And the first vicar to use the house as a parsonage was Thomas Atkinson. He was a single man. It was too big for him, really. And he wanted to move to be near his girlfriend, who was Miss Walker, who lived in LaSalle's Hall in Murfield. And so he asked Patrick if he would swap the living with him. And Patrick was more than pleased to come the other way because he had two young children. The house was bigger than where he was living in rented accommodation. And he saw Thornton as a step up. He paid more money. So, yeah, this humble terrace house on Market Street was perfect for Patrick at the time. And it was part of the community. He could walk along Market Street to the far end and down to Kipping House, where John Scofield first lived with daughter Elizabeth. And she was the same age as Maria Bronte. So they got on like house on fire. So they spent quite a lot of time having afternoon tea on the lawns at Kipping House. They're very, very close. And Patrick got on well with John Scofield Firth, who was a gentleman. And the society in Thornton suited Maria because she'd come from society in Penzance. So she liked the vibe of Thornton at that time. Maybe they didn't get that when they moved on to Haworth because Haworth was a different kettle of fish altogether. Yeah. So he's running down the main street and stuff. But yeah, that got to just a bit further in between the house on Market Street and Kipping House. There's Coffin End, which is...
Oh, yes.
People often ask why it's built like that. And it was actually because of the shape of the plot of land between Havelock Street and Havelock Square. It was triangular. And so they built the house, but they built it upwards 4 stories so they could fit people in. And that's why it's shaped like that.
It does really look like a coffin end. It really does. Is it true it was once an inn? I read that on occasion it had men wrestling with bears.
That's right, yeah. Going back in the day, pre-Bronte's coming in, there were 24 alehouses in Thornton.
Really?
Yeah, 24 alehouses, yeah. I take you back to earlier times. It was on the coach road to the lakes. You know, you came up Thornton Road, up the turnpike. You had to pay down at the turnpike to come up the road. And it was part of the way up to the lakes. So these were alehouses where people stop off for a jug of ale and then carry on the merry way. It was quite a busy, thriving little village. Alehouses are plenty.
Yeah. I know that Patrick Bronte, you have a special interest in him. Irishman, born in Ireland, how did he come to be living? Because I think he lived most of his adult life in England.
Yeah, that's right. He was born in Ballydrumroney in 1777 on St. Patrick's Day. Eldest of 10 children. Self-educated, there was no schooling as such. But when the local priest took an interest in what he was doing, Patrick actually helped educate the local priest's children. It was that good. And it became quite apparent that Patrick was a man of learning. And the priest managed to get him in contact with William Wilberforce, who sponsored him to go to Cambridge. So he went to Cambridge University from this hut, basically, that he lived in Ballydrumroney. Mm. And won every prize while I was at Cambridge, and all the prizes at Cambridge, literary prizes, were financial, which helped him through his university. It just did so well, and then he became a curate in Essex. That was his first posting in Essex, where apparently he proposed to a young lady, and I don't know what exactly went wrong, but he called it off and decided to leg it up into the Midlands, where he became involved with William Morgan, a great friend of his, an evangelist, and he said, we need to go north. And so they went up, and Patrick went to Hartshead, and his friend William Morgan went to Christchurch in Bradford, and they remained friends for quite a long time. And Patrick actually met up with his wife, Maria, who came up from Penzance to Woodhouse Grove School in Bradford as a governess. Patrick was what they call a school inspector, like Ofsted, basically. Yeah, and he went across to Woodhouse Grove, and apparently it was love at first sight. And,
oh, really?
Yeah, there was a lot of letters backwards and forwards. I mean, the famous My Saucy Pat, which Maria wrote to Pat, you know.
I've not heard of that.
Have you not? No. Oh, we need to read it, yeah. And they did a lot of their courting down at Kirkstall Abbey, which is obviously in Leeds. They did the walk down from Woodhouse Grove. Well, this book is a brilliant book, Sharon Wright, Mother of Brontes. It's well worth a read. But she's got all the letters that wrote to each other when they were courting.
Yeah.
And this saucy Pat, he'd written a letter, which obviously was quite.
Saucy.
Yeah, indeed, yeah. So she actually, I mean, normally she started her letters with my dear friend, or
Something
my
polite.
dearest friend. Yeah. But this particular one was my dear saucy Pat. And I've got the letter here. So the Reverend Patrick Bronte at Hartshead from Woodhouse Grove, November the 18th, 1812. So this is just before they got married. So my dearest saucy Pat. Now, don't you think you deserve this epithet far more than I do, that which you have given me? I really know not what to make of the beginning of your last. The winds, waves, and rocks almost stunned me. I thought you were giving me the account of some terrible dream, or that you had a presentiment of the fate of my poor box, who lost all the belongings on the wheel.
Oh.
Having no idea that your lively imagination could make so much of the slight reproof conveyed in my last. What will you say then when you get a real downright scolding? Since you show such a readiness to atone for your offences after receiving a mild rebuke, I am inclined to hope you will seldom deserve a severe one. I accept with pleasure your atonement and send you a free and full forgiveness, but I cannot allow that your affection is more deeply rooted than mine. However, we will dispute no more about this, but rather embrace every opportunity to prove its sincerity and strength. And she goes on to talk about the love for each other. But they wrote every day. That was how they communicated when he wasn't seeing her. So he'd write every day and they'd deliver to Woodhouse Grove. And if he missed a day, he got told off. But it was an instant love affair, really. And as you can see, that was November 1812. And they were married at 29th of December that year.
So she was Maria Branwell, wasn't she?
Yeah, that's a maiden name, yeah. But yeah, it's a fascinating read.
So they were married in 1812, and she went obviously went to live with him at Hartshead,
Louse Hall.
Louse Hall. What wonderful sounding place.
And then from there, they moved to Clough House, which was just below Hartshead, but both rented properties. And of course, when they got the chance to move to Thornton, the big house, or bigger, should I say.
They had the two daughters at this point, didn't they?
That's right, yeah. The eldest, Maria, and then they had Elizabeth. And Elizabeth, when she came to Thornton, the first thing they did was to christen Elizabeth in the bell chapel. So
Okay.
five of the children were christened in the bell chapel. So fascinating, really, how they came to Thornton. And again, the story of how they left was interesting, really. I think that the chaos in the house, it was two properties, really, 72, 74 Market Street, but it only had three bedrooms. And one of them was used as a maid's room. So, it was quite a small house. How they all managed to survive in that property.
I mean, it's amazing really, because from the time when they moved in, which was it 1815 when they moved to Thornton,
Yes.
in quick succession, four of the children were born, very almost one a year, weren't they? So they
Yes.
started with Charlotte. She was born in, was it
1815.
then Bramwell,
Yeah.
Emily,
And then finally, Anne.
yeah, Emily and Anne. And the story goes that they were all born in front of that fireplace. I mean, I've actually been in when it was open as a cafe. This was quite a long time ago. And I remember sitting around that little fireplace. It's tiny, isn't it? Downstairs in that little room, it's tiny.
Yeah.
And that would have been a thing, wouldn't it? Babies being born in front of fires in those days.
Yeah, because obviously it was a warm spot and the kitchen was next door. Where you probably sat in the cafe was probably on the school desk, was it?
I can't quite remember. I remember just looking at the fireplace and thinking, wow.
You'd have the heat from the kitchen and the heat from the fire. So it made sense, really, for them to be born in that spot. It was probably the warmest place in the house.
Yeah.
So they were all born in front of that fireplace, and thankfully, both the fireplace is still there, and that little room is still there. So I think William Scruton said in 1893 about the birthplace of the Brontes, he said It's a real shame that it's being used for base uses now, the birthplace of these people. You know, I think Welsh was used to, and they used to have a slaughterhouse at the back as well. So, you know,
did they?
Butchers. Yeah. When it was used as a butcher's shop. Yeah.
So, I mean, it's quite a thing, really, to have one child a year, isn't it? It did mean the house became quite crowded very quickly, didn't it?
Yeah. I mean, when they came, there was the four of them. You know, there was Mariah Elizabeth and Mariah and Patrick.
Yeah.
And then they brought Nancy Gars in to look after the children. And, of course, the family grew and grew exponentially over the next 4 years. And then they brought Nancy's sister in. So there were six children. And the parents, you know, it was just, the house was just chaos. And you can imagine the voices running up and down the passageway and the noise. And there was a big living room, so they did have a separate space for Patrick to sit and study, etc. But yeah, it was chaotic. And it's no wonder they loved to go on to the first and run about on the lawns. You know, because they were all children under eight, really, when you think about it, when they were in Thornton. So best will in the world to keep that amount of children cooped up in a small space would have been quite some task.
So Elizabeth Firth, who was at Kipping House,
yes,
she became godmother, is that right, to some
correct,
of the Brontes?
Yeah. Elizabeth Firth is little known by a lot of Bronte fans, which is surprising, because when Mariah died, when they went to Haworth, within 18 months, Mariah died of cancer. And Patrick actually went back to the first and asked Elizabeth to marry him. Being so close to the family, I think he was thinking more of a governess than a wife. But she said, "Don't be foolish, Patrick. You've got six children, you know. Not for me, really." And so he never married after that. But Mariah's sister took over the management of the family, really, Miss Brownwell, along with Nancy Gars and Sarah Gars, the sister. Ran the family home, and Tabitha Ackroyd, of course. But Elizabeth Firth, she really was an inspiration, because she just suited the family perfectly, because she got on well with Mariah. Mariah loved that, because she felt like she had a close companion, which she missed, really, when she was at Haworth. And Anne Dinsdale herself says that they didn't make the same amount of friends in Haworth as what they had in Thornton. They had plenty of friends involved, so they spent a lot of time trekking back the 7 miles from Haworth to Thornton to socialise. So that's good for us, because it validates our project, and people can imagine what society was like in Thornton at that time.
Yeah, because Patrick said, didn't he wrote to the bishop, this is when they were still in Thornton, to say that the house had become a very ill-constructed and inconvenient building for them. Those are the words he used. You can imagine that it would have been frustrating for him. I mean, he had to work as well. He had to, you know, write his sermons and everything. And
yeah, Patrick was a great walker as well. So he walked everywhere. He didn't use a stagecoach or a carriage or a horse. He walked everywhere. So he didn't spend a lot of time in the house. He was out and about. Even writing his sermons and that, he would do down the bell chapel, you know, the writing.
Oh, right.
Desk.
Yeah.
But the house itself, after Patrick and Mariah left, didn't become the next vicar's home. They built a new house at School Green, and our next vicar was called Mr. Bishop, and he became the perpetual curate after Patrick. So it was only used by two vicars, was the house on Market Street, Thomas Atkinson and Patrick. But you're right, it was chaotic. And when they got the opportunity to go to Haworth, of course, the parsonage at Haworth, grounds around it, looked out onto the moors. I think that appealed to Patrick as well, being a walker. And the girls loved their time at Haworth walking across the moors as well, as we know through the stories that they wrote.
They moved to Haworth in 1820. So you mentioned before, because they had so many friends in Thornton, they were sort of walking the 7 miles between the two places. What route would they have taken, do you think?
Well, there's an obvious route, and it's now part of the Bronte Way, which is up past Reservoir View along the top road and straight along Blackmore Road, which drops down through Oxenope and drops down along where the railway line is now and into Haworth. So it's an obvious cart route. It's an old cart route that they use.
Yeah.
When they came back to Thornton, they probably came back in the horse and carriage, you know. But Patrick was always walking. Even when he got the job, he went up for his first interview at how much he walked the 7 miles there. The trustees didn't like him, didn't want him.
Didn't they?
No. Howard had its own trustees and they like to choose their own. So when the Vicar of Bradford suggested that they have Patrick, they were very anti Patrick coming. And in fact, he was booed out of the pulpit the first three times he went to
Was
preach.
he?
Yeah,
Oh,
came
dear.
back with his tail between his legs a couple of times to Thornton. His family stayed with the first at Kipping House for a few weeks before they actually moved to Haworth because of the resolving the situation. So Patrick actually went for a walk to Haworth to meet the trustees after being booed out of the place a couple of times. And he went to see Stephen Smith, who was one of the trustees. And he said that the only way they would accept Patrick is if he resigned his living at Thornton before he came. And that's how it eventually came about, that he resigned his living in Thornton. And then they offered him the job and he went to live at Haworth. But I would suspect, and Patrick always said that Thornton was his happiest years. He said this later in his life, and it's one of his famous quotes. I suspect if the house had been bigger at Thornton, he wouldn't have stayed at Thornton. It was more a case of it was needs must. There was no way he could get a bigger house in Thornton, and this just fell into his lap, really.
Yeah, the parsonage to look at, you can see the appeal of it.
Yeah, it's surrounded by the moors as well, and it looks down on the village. You know, the church was just across the churchyard. So it was ideal in that sense, but the sanitation, et cetera, in Haworth was really bad at the time. And Patrick got really heavily involved in the Babbage Report, which was in 1830s, 1840s, to sort out the sewage in Haworth, because they only had a number of toilets at the top of the village, and the sewage ran down through the village. So it was not really nice at all. So they were fortunate that they lived at the top of the village. So that was sorted out sometime in the late 1840s. So he was heavily involved in that.
Going back to not long after they'd moved to Haworth, things did start to go wrong, didn't they, pretty quickly? You mentioned earlier about Maria. She died within a month of them arriving in Haworth.
Yeah, it was 18 months after they arrived, she got stomach cancer and died, which was, you know, it pulled the rug from Patrick. I mean, it was the love of his life, obviously,
yes.
You know. They were a very passionate couple and very close. And they intellectually, they aligned. I would imagine he lost his soulmate.
It started with his wife dying, but then sort of within 4 or 5 years, he lost two daughters as well, didn't he? They went to the clergy daughter school, Cowan Bridge, and they fell ill while they were there and died. So that's like three losses in a very short space of time.
Yeah, and Elizabeth and Maria were said to be really bright children as well. You know, they'd gone to Cowan Bridge, you know, full of enthusiasm, and the school itself was not noted for being really good. But once Maria got sick, Batchett brought them both home because he saw that what was happening, and it was TB, you know. So they brought them both home, and they died within a short space of time. But the girls, I mean, none of them lived above 30.
One of the things about all the children was they did have a very vivid, imaginative life, and they created their own worlds, didn't they? Imaginary worlds with toy soldiers that Patrick had brought back from one of his trips. And yes, they wrote all these very elaborate stories. In a sense, it is the children, you know, their imaginations that you're hoping to bring into the present, basically, and to inspire children now, that yes, you can dream and you can write, and you can do it all by yourself.
Yes, you can be creative, and that's the thing, isn't
yes.
it? You know, I mean, they created this world, this Gondal, with all these little books, the minute books, and we're trying to incorporate that into the house. They're going to have an ambition wall where the school children write in miniature their ambitions and their aspirations, and we will keep that wall forever. You know, we'll put that onto computer, etc. And in years to come, they'll be able to come back and say, I wrote that and I achieved, you know. So
That's
that's the idea, the
amazing.
ambition wall. Yeah. So I want to inspire the kids. They might have no idea what they want to do, but there will be some children that have an idea what they want to do. They want to be a writer, they want to be a doctor, they want to be a so-and-so. And if they've written that in miniature on that, and we're going to transpose that onto a computer so they'll be able to come in years and say, I wrote that and I became that. You know, that's the sort of thing we try to inspire kids to do, you know. So we really, really hope this will capture their imaginations.
I know. I mean, when you think about it, you give a child a pen and you show them a wall and you say to them, what do you want to do? That could be a really key moment in their life that they will always remember. That's brilliant. It's a brilliant idea.
Yeah, I mean, I remember when we did the Bronte 200 celebrations, and I had Ashley Jackson, the artist,
Oh,
you
yeah.
know, the watercolor. He came up to paint a watercolor of the Bell Chapel, and he always said, "I want to do with the brush what the Brontes did with the pen," you know. And he did. He achieved. That's what he became. He became a renowned artist. So, you know, if you can capture that moment in time, I think sometimes the little things that stick in your mind, you know, one little thing you remember from way, way back. And I think sometimes society knocks it out of kids, you know, you can't
Yes.
do this, you can't do that. You must have this, you must have that. And some of our most creative people have never had a minute's education or a minute's guidance. They've just had it within them, and they've allowed it to come out and flourish. And I think that's what we need to be. We need to say, don't let anybody tell you you can't. You say, I can and I will.
So things with the campaign have really They've really, like you've said, snowballed. Things have gathered pace incredibly, even from when I last spoke to you, I think. Do you want to bring us up to date with the fundraising and the latest developments with the
Yeah,
campaign?
well, we first started off with a little fundraiser in the village just to test the water. We raised, I think, £25,000 just giving. And then we thought, well, we're definitely interested in this. So we applied for several grants, and we got a wonderful grant of £250,000 from the Bradford 2025, which really helped us along our way. And then we got part of the Levelling Up Fund, the Community Ownership Fund. We got £240,000 from them. And then we had our crowdfunder, where we offered people a chance to buy shares in the Community Benefit Society. And we raised another £120,000 there.
Yeah, you've got, is it 630 shareholders now and counting?
Yeah, and count. Well, we closed the offer in just before Christmas. And I'm not saying never, but we may have another share offer at the back end of the year for a specific item, maybe. But yeah, it was 600, nearly 650 shareholders. So we're still fundraising because obviously we want to be, we're a not-for-profit society, so anything we make will go back into the business. But we want to give it longevity. So we're looking at grants to fund the arts programme. So that'll give us maybe 3 years of a rolling arts programme for the evening events. So we never stop fundraising. But hopefully with the three themed bedrooms, Charlotte, Emily and Anne, and the cafe and the event space, we should be self-financing within 4 years, and that's the target, to be, you know, self-fulfilling, really. We won't need grants from anywhere, but yeah, initially it will be to get the grants in to fund the events we do for the first few years.
So we're just starting out on 2024. What are the plans then for Thornton and the birthplace?
Well, this year, obviously, we're hoping that by the end of this week and the early part of next week, the house will actually become ours, finally, legally. And we then need to get the building regulations in place, which can take up to 3 months. So that gives us a 6 month window where nothing much is going to be happening inside the house in terms of renovation and refurbishment. So we're trying to plan maybe four or five events, evening events, to inspire people for what's going to come in 2025. So we've got a selection of authors that's going to come and give an evening talk. So it's sort of a teaser, as it were. In terms of the building itself, as I said, very little is going to happen until June, July, and then we'll have a 6 month window. We'll have to close altogether.
the roof needs doing, obviously rewiring, etc., and the reconfiguration slightly upstairs. So we're not going to be doing much there. It's going to be more about promoting what's to come. So we're now starting to put together a calendar of events for 2025. We've already got 2 weeks of events planned for the Literary Festival week, Bradford Literary Festival, obviously. Every birthday of the Brontes will be celebrated in the house in some way, either event or a talk or a tour, etc. And all the deaths, etc., will also be celebrated, you know. So that gives us really 12 dates already, and that's just one a month, you know. And that is something that I'm sure people will be clamouring to come to, because it's a bespoke event in a world-renowned birthplace. I could never understand this. That you can have three authors born in one little house and not have loads of people coming to visit it.
The blue plaques there.
Yeah. The original plaque was put up in the 60s, and then we had a blue plaque put up, a new blue plaque last year to commemorate that. But we'd like to get the old plaque out again, because that stood there for quite a lot of years. So we could probably have to put it either side of the door. But yeah, so in terms of what's happening coming up, that's what's going to be coming up inside the building. Outside the building, in terms of the group, at the moment now, we're going to be promoting a Friends Of, much like they have at Peace Hall, where you pay an annual fee and you help with fundraising, you get priority booking information, things like that. So that will probably be launched sometime mid-June, July. And we're promoting the building through our Facebook page and our website. And we also ask people to share as much as possible anything we post and to get the message out there. Because it's not just about the education, it's about people coming to visit the birthplace, a pilgrimage, as it were. You know, we've got people who do the Bronte Way, we've got people come from far and wide. I've had people, just recently, I've had people in the Bell Chapel from Peru, and I had somebody from Paris just a couple of weeks ago. And they come just to see where the children were christened, and they're desperate to get inside the house. So, you know, we need to get that message out there. And to think you can be able to stop in Charlotte's bedroom or Emily's or Anne's bedroom and spend a few nights there and explore Bronte country, as it were. It must be an inspiration for a lot of Bronte fans. I mean, the pilgrimages that people make to Howard, they go back every year. We want to create that sort of legacy as well, so people can come in. And the audio visual room that we're going to create will give locals a chance to go in and listen to the story. And people won't have to just go into the cafe, they'll be able to go into the audio visual room and get a feeling of the life that they led at that time. So that we're going to create something special there as well. So we've got a lot going on this year. As I said, we've got to try and get the diary filled up for 2025, obviously. We'll probably have a soft opening, hopefully, in December, just as a trial run, if we get the work done in time. So it's exciting times. There's a lot to be done, but I'm looking forward to actually getting the keys and getting in there and bringing people in.
How will you source the furniture and things like that, you know, for the bedrooms? Have you got plans for that?
Yeah. Kristen Ackroyd, who's on the team with us, she's run Bronte tours before. She had a bespoke B&B that was done out in Regency Furniture. Regency Furniture, as probably people know now, is very much out of fashion for the general public. So it's relatively cheap to buy. And places like Rodney Tennant's up in Leyburn and that have masses of Regency Furniture in mint condition, you know. So we'll be utilising people like that to get the furniture and to make sure these rooms are in keeping with the Bronte times and the Bronte period. So, yeah, there's plenty of furniture about, and that's the plan that we will have, you know, the four-poster bed, the Regency sideboard. Yeah, I mean, the table that the parsonage bought for £650,000, I think it was. Yeah, that was originally at the parsonage in Thornton.
Oh, was it?
It was bought, and it was taken from Thornton to Haworth. So, okay. You know, that table was originally in Thornton. So it wasn't bought when they were at Haworth, it was bought in Thornton and taken with them. We'll not get any original pieces of furniture, but we'll get in keeping imperial furniture. Because Arthur Bell Nichols dispersed all the equipment and furniture that was at Haworth, and obviously some of them stuff came from Thornton. So to get the originals, I mean, the only original furniture I know of that is in Thornton is obviously the writing desk and the wardrobe and the coffer that's in the exhibition in St. James Church. And they will remain there as part of the exhibition. I'm really looking forward to it. I think this year's going to be an exciting year in preparation for 2025 and beyond.
So if people want to get involved with all this, how do they get involved? You mentioned that you've got a Facebook page.
We have.
And the website. What's the Facebook page called?
At the moment, it's called the Bronte Birthplace Community Ownership Campaign. And then the website is www.brontebirthplace.com. And we will be merging with brontebirthplace.co.uk when we buy the property, because Mark's allowing us to use the .co.uk. Yeah. So you can find out all the information. We have a latest news section on the website, and we update that every few days. So that'll keep people informed. And, you know, I mean, we really, over the last 12 months, we've done, the publicity has been fantastic. So we've been on news at 10.
I remember you saying, actually, that you got a call, didn't you, saying ITN wanted to talk to you, and you just assumed it was the local.
And of course, it was national TV, which was fantastic. I mean, 2 minutes on national TV, you could see the spike in the shares after that. You
know? Really? That's brilliant. Yeah. Yeah.
And then we got the page in The Guardian and the Observer. Mm. Christy did a big piece in the Yorkshire Post. So them sort of things are gold dust.
Yeah. Can I just say, you mentioned Krista Aykroyd.
Yes.
She's been very passionate about this whole project, hasn't she? You know her very well.
Yes. I met Krista some 22 years ago, 23 years ago. At that time, she was involved with the Literary Festival and Heritage Tours. And because of my passion for the Bell Chapel, we became good friends. And she's always done anything that we wanted her to do. And when this chance to buy it again came up, she was so keen to get involved. And she's so passionate about the project. It comes across when, you know, whenever you see her. But she's got a passion. She was a small girl. Her father took her to Hamlet when she was a small girl, and said these three girls achieved what they wanted to do. There's no barriers for them. They just went on and did it. And that's what you can do. It's the girls. She always calls them my girls.
Does she?
Bradford girl. Yeah, because she's a Bradford girl. You know, and that's her passion, whereas mine's more for Patrick and the environment as well. So, yeah, we work really well together. We get on really well.
It's been wonderful talking to you, Steve. Thank you so much for coming on to History Out Loud.
Well, thanks for listening to me. I do ramble on a bit, but I've enjoyed it.
It's fascinating. And I really hope that everything goes well this year. When you have your events, they'll be advertised on Facebook and the website. Is that right?
Certainly will. It'd be lovely to see you. If ever you want showing round, just give me a ring when you're going to be about and I'll show you around the village.
Oh, brilliant. That'd be great. Yeah. Yeah. Thank you. Thank you.
You're welcome. Yeah. Anytime.
You've been listening to History Out Loud, a podcast by Calderdale Libraries. Produced and presented by Jill Carpenter. Next time, Sarah Browning will be back with us to talk about the Friends of Christ Church, Todmorden.